Today with Sarah McInerney. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.
Russia's long reach and its attempts to shape events are the subjects of a book called Shadow State, Murder, Mayhem and Russia's Remaking of the West. The author, Luke Harding, is a former Moscow correspondent for The Guardian and has written extensively on Putin's Russia. He joins me now from London. And Luke, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Sarah. Great to be with you.
On the title of your book, what is the Shadow State?
Well, the shadow state is a regime of spies, in particular the regime of Vladimir Putin. And what we've seen in recent years are a series of malign misadventures, you could say, including the poisoning in 2018 of Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia by two Russian military spies using a lethal nerve agent, Novichok. And if you go all the way back to 2006... two more assassins sent by Moscow to kill Alexander Litvinenko, a dissident with a radioactive cup of tea. And then you can throw in invasions of Georgia, Ukraine. And I think the most spectacular Kremlin espionage operation of recent years, which was the plot in 2016 to help Donald Trump become president of the United States, which we now know, according to Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor who investigated this last year, came about following systematic Russian interference.
And of course, it's not just Trump that Putin has attempted to support inadvertently. He's also cultivated Aaron Banks, the backer of Leave.eu.
Yeah, I mean, this is something I try and explore in Shadow State. There's been a lot of attention on what happened in America in 2016 and with Trump, but there's been comparatively less attention on Brexit and Russian efforts to support a Leave vote in the EU referendum. And what you have to bear in mind is that Putin hates the European Union. He really wants to kind of destroy and sabotage it because he sees it as a kind of a effective bloc that imposed sanctions on Moscow after the annexation of Crimea in 2014. So what I kind of lay out in my book is the way in which Russian spies interacted with Aaron Banks, huge donor to Leave.eu. He gave £8.5 million, biggest donation in British political history, in a series of meetings held at the Russian embassy where Banks was offered gold and then diamonds and gold and so on. And I think the accusation against the then government of Theresa May and Boris Johnson is that they have not fully interrogated this for political reasons. And of course, we're still awaiting to see the Russia report from Parliament's Intelligence and Security Committee, which Johnson blocked before the last British general election.
It is also Russia, indirectly, you write, indicated its support for Boris Johnson. How is it doing that?
Well, actually, in quite banal ways. The thing you have to understand about the Kremlin is yeah, there are military spies running around with lethal substances, practically in uniform, but there's also a whole class of oligarchs and intermediaries and business people who've been very successful in recent years in investing in the UK and indeed in Ireland and influencing, and I would argue, kind of corroding our political process. Now, one person that Johnson knows very well is Alexander Lebedev, who used to be one of my contacts when I was in Moscow as the Guardian's correspondent there. He's the owner of the London Evening Standard. And the day after Johnson's historic election victory last December, he went to a party at Lebedev's mansion in central London. And that was kind of curious. And I think it was a sort of V sign to Johnson's critics over Russia. He's also been to Italy to a palazzo owned by the Lebedevs. And I'm not suggesting that Johnson is a Russian agent, but I do think we should look at the amount of money coming from Moscow-linked donors into the Conservative Party, which is running into millions of pounds, and also ask why Johnson hasn't published the Russia report.
How sophisticated are the spies in the spy operation that you write about?
I mean, so that's a great question. I mean, I compare them to a sort of lethal but dopey golem. And you can kind of laugh at the golem as it goes down your street until the golem takes out its arm and smashes the roof of your house with its fist. In other words, if you look at the Skripal assassins, they were pretty stupid. They came up with a crazy cover story that went out on Russian TV afterwards, that they'd gone to Salisbury to go and see the cathedral and its wonderful spire, and nobody believed them, and we all laughed at that. But actually, a woman died, Dawn Sturgis, after spraying Novichok on her wrists. The Skripals are still in hiding. And I think that the message of the Salisbury poisoning was directed at the British, whom Vladimir Putin loathes, but it was also a kind of message back to the Russian elite and people working for Russian spy agencies that if they cross the line, if they betray the motherland, that then Moscow will extend its kind of dark arm and smash them.
You also write extensively about Trump and the 2016 presidential election, and you look at whether or not the Russians and Putin have something on Trump, have some leverage over him. What did you find out about that?
Well, I mean, all of the people I talked to, by which I mean sort of people in Moscow and also professional intelligence people. I spoke to one head of a major European, sort of EU, Western intelligence agency, who said, yeah, of course the Russians have got compromising material on Donald Trump. It's what they do. And I know this from personal experience. I mean, when I was a correspondent, the FSB, which is the successor agency to the KGB, broke into the family apartment where I was living with my wife and two small kids. And we found out from the British Embassy, they advised us that we were bugged, there were bugs in the bedroom, that really everything we did was being videoed and recorded. And I was just a kind of mildly irritating foreign correspondent. And so if you are Donald Trump visiting Moscow, as he did so many times, or indeed President Obama, there will be technical surveillance. Trump's been going to Moscow since 1987, on and off, trying to do business deals there. Pretty clear the Russian file on Trump is, I've been to RTE's studio in Dublin, it's bigger than your studio.
Okay. It'll be certainly interesting to see it. You paint, though, Luke, a very depressing picture, really, of the state of Russia on the ground now for people living there. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, this week has been quite a momentous week in Russian politics. There's been a constitutional referendum or kind of vote, in inverted commas, which is a sort of package of constitutional changes, but effectively allows Vladimir Putin to run again for president twice. It means he's going to be in power probably until 2036, well into his early 80s. That's a fantastically depressing prospect for Russians who want change, who want a less corrupt regime. But bear in mind that Russia, after two decades of Putin, has become an enormous kleptocracy and a kind of exporter of corruption around the world. But also, actually, it's bad news for Ireland, it's bad news for the UK, it's bad news for the EU, because the kind of dark games that we've seen from Russia, this aggressive revisionist attitude towards the world, confrontational, changing European boundaries like we saw in Crimea, that will continue because Putin has really just a kind of KGB mindset, and he sees the West as his enemy.
All right, well, we might leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us. That's Luke Harding, a former Moscow correspondent for The Guardian, speaking about his book, Shadow State, Murder, Mayhem, and Russia's Remaking of the West. Luke, thank you very much.